You're listening to the Law and Liberty podcast of the Chalcedon Foundation, and I am your host, Andrea Schwartz, who is speaking today with a good friend of Chalcedon, Bill Hyde. We did a podcast a bit ago where he was talking about his latest enterprise, the audio theater, taking Henty books, a historical novelist who made history come alive for his readers, and he has carefully chosen so far. There are two in his catalog where he takes heroes, the first one, Sir Francis Drake, and puts to life the story of his explorations, not leaving out what so many history books do, the Christian element of this man's life. Well, he's done the same thing again with William Wallace, known to most people from the Braveheart movie. And the newest audio drama is In Freedom's Cause, and Bill is here to talk not only about it, but how he came to want to tackle this story and this subject now in our day. So, Bill, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Andrea, and I'm always excited to talk to your listeners who I think share a lot of in common with what both of us do. And I think when you talk about Law and Liberty, just the name of the podcast, this new story In Freedom's Cause really kind of, I think, has some traction because this story is about law. In one case, the story is about two visions of law, and it's also about liberty. But Longshanks' view of law and perhaps Wallace's view of law were very different things. And Wallace ends up calling him on it, and the result ends up being liberty for the Scottish people. So it was an exciting story to do because, as you mentioned, one of our passions is bringing the faith back of these great characters. And if you watch the movie Braveheart, you see another very passionate man, but Mel Gibson kind of sanitized anything about Wallace's faith. And so what it kind of looks like, that battle, Andrea, is it kind of looks like a revenge story. You kill my wife, now I'm going to, you know, it's almost like a mafia story. And it really wasn't a mafia story. Now, if someone kills your wife, you're probably going to be angry. So we can't say that it's these things are mutually exclusive or something has to be either one or the other. But what we see with Wallace is a very different kind of striving for freedom that really ends up being a story that gets told over and over and over and really plays a part of our history in this country as well.
Right. I know when I saw the movie Braveheart, to be honest with you, it's the first time I had even known about the conflict in Scotland. It wasn't something that when I was in school was really brought up. I went to private school, but we didn't really learn Scottish history. And so that was my first introduction. Well, then as a result of listening to Dr. Rushdoony and other people talk about books that had influenced them when they were young, the Henty books came up. And so there were some listeners at the time who were also listening to these recordings that I was at the time. They were called the Easy Chair Recordings. And they were inspired, and what they did was they started taking these books, which were in the public domain, and republishing them. And so we had a whole slew of Henty books on our shelves. And my children, being avid readers, like all good homeschoolers hope to be or end up being, they were way ahead of me in terms of being able to read these books. There was no way I could ever keep up with my children's reading. But during one summer, I was taking my kids to swim lessons, and so I read In Freedom's Cause, and I still picture being at the swimming pool when I'm reading it because that's when I would read it. And I discovered at the time, like you said, that the story that was depicted on the screen wasn't the same story. And Wallace's wife actually knew she was going to be killed but told her husband not to come rescue her, because the cause was more important than even their marriage.
Another great example of women paying the ultimate price. In this case, she did. I think in these stories, what is so much fun for me is just bringing out the character of the men, the character of the women, and how Christianity affects them, and how it animates them and motivates them. And we know our country was founded by Christians, and there's some folks that kind of use feeble attempts to kind of say that that's not the case. But even looking at Jefferson and Franklin, you see an awful lot of Christian talk. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to understand for people to know that when someone takes a stand the way Wallace did, that he took a stand that was multidimensional but really faith-based. He was, I like to think of him as being in tremendous covenant with his family, and you had this kind of clan influence as it met Christianity, and so you had a bunch of tough people, and when Christianity came to them, they stayed tough. So it produced a kind of a tough Christianity that stayed strong throughout quite a period of time and was persecuted. And, of course, later on, a lot of those Scots came over, and Scots-Irish came over to this country and populated the middle colonies. And they were some of the folks, these Scots, that still had that fire in their belly that took it to the English again. On our behest and on the American side, the revolutionary side, war for independence. So a story really has a lot of value because people remember, at least they're supposed to remember. I think we're a little bit in a state of amnesia today culturally. It's like we're all in some big nursing home. We forgot all of the founding principles that have built freedom and have kept law on the forefront and have identified where law really comes from. Rush always said, you can find the source of any law, any God in the country by finding its source of law. So where does law come from was an important point. It's an important point for us, but it's also an important point for Wallace and then for our founding fathers. And I'm trying to almost triangulate with Wallace's struggle with our founding fathers and with where we are right now. And I think the same principles that this transcendent appeal to God for liberty, that was successful in Wallace's case. It was successful for our founding fathers. And I think if we're going to do anything, if we're going to reconstruct, if we're going to start talking about liberty in this sense, we've got some models that have worked for us in the past. Now, this is a kid's story. I'm kind of talking about some adult themes here. But this is a kid's story that teaches those things to children, those strong principles to children.
One of the things I love about the fact that you actually put together a radio drama as opposed to trying to undertake a film, aside from the fact if you were actually going to film it, the cost would have been astronomically higher, but you pointed out, I think in our previous conversation, that by making everything so visual, the impression isn't quite as strong, and you don't allow listeners, be they child or adult, to actually activate their imagination. And when they do, when they picture what they're hearing, it leaves a more lasting impression than if they were just watching images on a screen.
Well, that's just a part of science now, too. I'd like to think that some of that is we just know that when we start to go to too much visual side, and this is another podcast people should go listen to because this is something that Rush talked about a lot as well, is what happens when there's too much visual in a culture. And of course, you get a lot of emotion from the visual side. And don't get me wrong, you can get both sides of the brain activated by either format. But we really felt like audio drama gave us the ability to, if we did it right, to activate a child's imagination, well, a child of any age, really, but to make something come alive in a way that it could never come alive in a movie. Now, I know our listeners probably tend to be book readers a little more than the general populace of America, and so but you have to realize most people in America are just watching TV, watching screens, watching, not reading or listening, but processing things visually. And there's always trouble with that, I think, that tyranny, really, there's a tremendous link from the visual side, because if we can be stimulated by emotions, and one of the technologies or mediums is visual, then all you got to do is go back and watch the Nuremberg rallies and kind of see, I think, what Rush was talking about. People can be whipped into a frenzy in a way visually that they maybe can't through audio or through a book. And so we wanted kids to be able to visualize. And, of course, under Drake's flag, we have this amazing shark scene where kid jumps in the water and he's trying to, you know, swimming through and save this girl. And a child, instead of it being visually done for them, a child's memory has to actually work and construct and release chemicals in his or her brain to imagine what something like that is taking place. The beautiful part about it, Andrea, is that's true, but a child can have fun while this is taking place. So I think there's two almost a really kind of a neat thing when two powerful forces connect and you're able to make a child grow, make a child learn, allow this type of media to really make a difference in their life.
Yeah. The one thing I would disagree with you on, I don't think this is just a kid's book. I think kids will, first of all, most of them haven't been exposed to things like this. But I think there's so much animation today, there's so much pretend, that it's very hard for children to differentiate between what's real and what's not. There are often times when I'll be talking to a child and I'll bring something up, and the first thing the child will say, is that real? Because they're so used to things that aren't real. And so it's important that as you're telling stories that you share that these are real stories. These aren't pretend stories.
That's exactly the case. And right now we're in something that we could call memory wars or narrative wars. What's winning the hearts and minds of families across our country? And I think, you know, Halloween, we were discussing Halloween before, but Halloween just gets over. We're thinking about it in retrospect. Most kids are going to dress up with some sort of popular culture, a character in mind. And it started me thinking, and I brought this up in church, you know, is your legacy that you're living, is that, and then giving to your kids, is that, you know, Pixar driven? Are your kids going to say Pixar and Disney shaped me as a human being? Or are they going to say my mom and dad shaped me, the Bible shaped me, and the way God used great Christian men and women in history shaped me? And, you know, I'd prefer the latter, but I don't see it going that way. And I think we really need to be careful as culture presses into our homes that we have our priorities straight.
Right. And I think there's a view of manhood that can be exaggerated in either sense. You either have the person who goes out and has no respect for authority and he's just going to establish himself as the head guy, or you have somebody who doesn't think you should fight at all. What your heroes, or the ones you've chosen to highlight in your productions thus far, are people who fear God and endeavor to do what's right according to what God says. And that's something that Christian families really need to establish with their children.
Well, and this is back to the concept that Rush has talked about a lot, is there's power religion, right? Religion from below, he used to call it. And Longshanks is exemplifying that in this particular story. Power from below. And then what is on the other side of the table, the other side of the battlefield, is a guy, William Wallace, originally, who really wanted to see his superiors take this cause up. He wanted to excite and animate and motivate the Scottish nobles. And because they were being paid off and for a bunch of other reasons, he wasn't able to do that. And so the sword ends up in his hand. But Andrea, a reluctant warrior who respected authority, he knew who he was, he knew his place, and he really didn't want to take this gauntlet down. Now, if you look at George Washington, you get kind of a similar thing, don't you? You see him not really wanting power, not really wanting to do some of these things. And this manly character that you're talking about eventually steps up and rises up and takes its position. But just like Cromwell and a lot of other leaders, it isn't someone seeking power for power's sake. And our kids need to know the difference between the power that comes from their character and acting in a righteous way and power that comes from below and is always self-destructive.
I think there's a message for today because too many people think the only alternative we have is like, so you guys want to take over the culture. Well, there's lots of ways to take over a culture. You can do it by the sword, or you can do it by the word. And there's nothing that precludes that as Christians live and act faithfully in their various callings, that there are going to be people who watch. And the story of In Freedom's Cause has that element in it so well. You have a person who just sort of wants to get along, Robert the Bruce, let's not make waves. You know, you can upset his life if he challenges the authority. But he's inspired by a William Wallace, and when William Wallace eventually loses his life for the cause, In Freedom's Cause, Robert the Bruce suddenly steps up to the plate and realizes, like it or not, he's got a responsibility.
Yeah, and God made us social creatures, and so I think it's important to know that we're kind of hardwired to connect with each other, to learn from each other, to be inspired by each other, and in this case, to stand on each other's shoulders. That's a very important point about this, because in this story, don't want to ruin the ending, but here's part of the ending that everyone should know. William Wallace gets killed before the ultimate battle for freedom takes place. And so I like that idea, because the martyrs that have gone in our Christian past, sometimes it doesn't look like a victory. Things that happen to us in our lives, they don't seem like they're victories. Matter of fact, they seem like they're pretty profound defeats. But most of Christianity, I've found, is really, we find this in the story, but what you see is, you know, victories disguised as defeats and defeats disguised as victories. And that comes out, again, in the story in a very profound way. It's never over, even when you die. It's mm-hmm. never over. That's what I love about Christianity. That's what I love about God's grace. That's what I love about the way that God created mankind, that we can stand on each other's shoulders. And the story of history, we talk about, all right, what do we like? We like history. The story of history should be, and is in many cases, the story of folks learning from other folks, standing on their shoulders, and then acting appropriately. I think that's just profound. That's the kind of vigorous life that our founders had in this country. And I think so many people want that back. But before we get it back, we got to lay a little concrete. We got to build a little bit of a foundation biblically to make sure the folks that chase just the Constitution, I love our Constitution, but everyone needs to realize, just like the Treaty of Arbroath that gave eventually the Scots freedom, it's a byproduct of a Christian culture. It's not the thing itself. So we're not chasing the Declaration of Independence. We're not chasing this treaty in 1320 that the nobles signed, that eventually they sent this message out to the world that freedom's possible. We're not chasing those things. Those things, and like our Constitution, they're byproducts of a way a culture thinks. And to chase them directly is to miss the mark. So I think just creating Christian character to begin with is one of the most important things that families can do, one of the most important legacies that you can leave your children. Will we find freedom again? I don't know in this country if we'll find it again. It's not my prerogative. You know, I joke with you all the time and say, Andrea, that you know, duty is ours, consequences are God's, right? It's mm-hmm. it's a Stonewall Jackson thing. I don't know about any of those things, but I know I'm supposed to run this race, and I'm going to run it hard. And my passion is to make sure people know who great heroes, Christian heroes especially, were in history and how their Christianity changed their lives and sort of laid the way for the rest of us down the road.
And as great as the stories are that you tell, to me, just as great a story is how a guy who loved history, Bill Hyde, who had set aside some money for retirement, which most responsible people do, decided that what he wanted to do with his retirement was actually not retire at all, and put together these productions so that the legacy you could leave would be more than just, you know, here's a little bit of inheritance. In other words, you're inspiring, hopefully, not only your own children and grandchildren, but there are other little boys and girls out there with mommies and daddies who are listening to these and realizing that they can make a difference in their sphere in much the same way that you have made a difference in your sphere.
Well, thank you. Yeah, but you know, that's kind of fun to be able to affect a lot of other people, and I never know how it's going to affect folks. I never know how one story is going to affect another human being, and that's what I love about life is that I can do my best, and then I can kind of lay it out there and see what happens. But there's 120 Henty books, right? So here's the plan. This is a long-term plan. So my son Nick, who is an attorney, he was a Henty boy. And I'll never forget, I was mowing the yard the day that I listened to that particular easy chair where they talked about the Henty books. And I started looking for Henty books. Couldn't find a lot of Henty books because they hadn't been printed at that time. But I found some used ones until Preston Speed came up to speed, no pun intended, and pushed a bunch of them out as a result of that easy chair. But I listened to that easy chair too, as you did. I'll never forget. I was mowing the yard at this house out on the farm, and I said to myself, wow, I'd like to know more about Henty. And so I started to read a little bit about Henty and then started to pursue these books. Well, my son Nick, he ate these up, and there was no way. It was almost like a problem that I had, because if I say go to bed, you know, that should mean go to bed. It didn't really mean go to bed, because he would stay up and read those books. That's how powerful they were. And him and a couple of his buddies at Christian school they were going to read these books, and they just went through them all. Anyway, long story short, I take Nick with me. And one of the fondest memories that I have from the last production in the studio, I think maybe on our website in Freedom's Cause, there may be some pictures there, but it's of my son, who I'm one way or another working with to take this project on after I'm gone, working with Jimmy Cosmo, who was in Braveheart, trying to direct Jimmy Cosmo, one I think is a great, great actor. And I have a picture of that someplace, and not sure quite where it's at. It could be on the website. But that to me just tickles me. And then his son, William, it would be theoretically in line next to start producing, because we can produce maybe, we do one a year now, but maybe we can do two a year if we get cranking, because sure. It really is it's a long process with Foley and all these things. So I do kind of have a plan that has my family involved, and I'm always dragging my kids along with me. And
right.
I think that's something that parents, not lecturing here, but I'm just kind of saying, you know, it's not always fun to drag your kids around everywhere you go, but there really are a lot of blessings and benefits from it. They grow up intelligent. They're interested in other people. They understand your problems. And I've just, my whole life, my kids have been involved in my business. And now they're involved in this project, and I'm happy to say that, because it's a lot of fun for all of us. We laugh, we cry together, we do all those things together as we produce the product for people outside our family.
Right. That's an important lesson, because I've had a similar experience. When your children are involved in what you're involved in, and that the people you respect, they at least get a chance to meet. When your children grow older, they can become really valuable counselors to you. So in a lot of ways, if you do it properly, you're training future counselors. You may be training future caregivers, because we all get older, and if God grants us long life, we're going to need some help along the way. And so the whole idea of building a trusty family, which is a concept that Dr. Rushdoony talked about, is an economic base as well as a base to help with the various areas of education and health care and welfare and things like that, where we're taking care of each other. What a cool idea to think that these audio theater productions could go on well beyond when you or your son were around to do it, that the family caught the bug and that's what they wanted to continue to do.
That'd be amazing if that happened. I was thinking of Naboth as you were saying that, you know, this idea of the trustee family where you're an administrator, and of course the government wants Naboth's vineyard, and he doesn't want them to have it because his perspective is, it's not my vineyard to give you there, buddy. It's it's our family's. It's our family going backwards, and it's our family going forwards, and that's really a profound idea if you can keep it going, but it takes a lot of passion and energy to keep it going. Your kids, your family, your grandkids, everybody, they have to know that you love life. They have to know that you care, that you're passionate about something. That has to come through in your communications with them and your actions and just how you live your life. So I think there's a lot going on with these productions kind of behind the scenes that's really just edifying and, as I said earlier, a great blessing for our family as well, and just being able to provide this kind of wholesome entertainment.
And I'm struck with the fact that in a casual conversation talking about books that influenced them as boys, a family decided to get the books back into print. That was Preston Speed Publishers that you talked about, who incidentally named their company after their fathers. One's last name, you know, so that's their story. And then on top of that, you know, your sons read, your children read, my kids read the books, hundreds of other kids, thousands of other kids read these books now that are offered again because they're back in print. And so we should never think that our efforts are too small. We don't have to be Steven Spielberg or George Lucas to affect things. We'll just do it differently.
Yeah, and I think sometimes I'm a little bit of a woodsman, and I like to hunt and fish, and we live right by the Mississippi River, which it's about 2 miles wide where I live, and so that's just the game and everything around here is amazing. But anybody that's been through the woods or the timber will know or understand the idea, if you're going in too deep into a place, this idea of breaking sticks or leaving a trail so that you can find your way back,
mm-hmm.
right? I view this project of ours as just a way for civilization to find its way back. And it's like breaking these sticks. And it's just kind of, you know, my gift in some sense to people who want to find their way back, who know that there's a right and wrong, who know that there is such a thing as godly culture, and yet are fighting a battle in their own life, as we all are, and are just looking for some tools to find their way back. There is a right way to go. We've got to the point in post-Christian culture, post-modernity, whatever you want to call it, where, you know, the battle is sometimes isn't whether this is right or this is wrong. The battle now that we have is people say, who cares whether anything's right or wrong? So that's the horror that I see. We kind of knew this was coming. Van Til talked about this downward integration into the void. Well, guys, we're there. We're at that point. And parents need to really be self-conscious, epistemologically self-conscious, if you want to use bigger words, about where we're at, and consciously make an effort to guide their families and to tell their families true stories, stories from history. That's what we're trying to do. This is just one way we're trying to do it. Families can think of a lot of different ways to do it, but boy, you better not think everything's okay, because it's not.
And two things that, from what you said, I know in my family, I had a very eccentric dad, and I have great stories. Now, when I was growing up, they weren't great stories. They were embarrassing stories. But my kids love those stories, and every now and then, they'll say, tell that story again. I say, well, you know that story, but just tell me again, because it's such a good story. Well, in a very real sense, the characters in Scripture, they're our family. That's part of family stories. And these historical accounts that you're bringing back to life, their forefathers, so in that regard, they're our family too. And so we're really getting family stories with what you're doing.
I like to think, that's a great way to say that. I like to think of people in history as my family. And I fell in love with Drake. We talked about Drake before, and just what an incredible human being Sir Francis Drake was. More famous than LeBron James in the world than LeBron is today. That's an amazing thing. People just try to touch him. He had so much character and strength.
And that's without TV or the internet.
Yeah. Just you know, people whose fuel that fueled their fire was just their virtue and their character. Do they have faults? Of course they have faults. They all have faults. So when, you know, let's turn this into apologetics, right? When someone says, yeah, this guy had these faults, well, I know. Everyone has faults. So can we just get that out of the way ahead of time? William Wallace wasn't perfect. Francis Drake wasn't perfect. Robert the Bruce wasn't perfect. There is not anyone who was ever perfect. So we can't let that stand in the way. The left and the secularists will try to take that away from us by saying, yeah, but, yeah, but. Well, of course, yeah, but. I'm a sinner, too. So is everyone listening to this. But what we've got with these great stories are people that really did do things beyond what's normal, and I think they kind of, you know, it's almost like someone going through the jungle and with a machete and just kind of cutting a path for you. And what's the value of that? I think it's very valuable because we can learn from history. We can learn from these great people. We're coming up on Thanksgiving, and just like a commercial break, nothing that I have to sell, but a commercial break for people that I think part of the time when I go to England, and my son Nick and I go to England, one of the things we like to do is go to Plymouth and away in the south and go to Scrooby way in the north where the pilgrims were. I think of, and I go to the Austerfield, some of these places, I think of these people, Andrea, as my friends. Mm-hmm. These people, Brewster, Bradford, they're my friends. I can't wait to meet them mm-hmm. in heaven.
Right.
It's an incredible thing, and I look at Drake the same way, as well as you mentioned, you know, we have our own family members, but we're all tied together in this great life, and I think just learning the lesson to live passionately from some of these great people has been so helpful to me.
And the title of your recent one, In Freedom's Cause, I think the really important word there is cause, because a cause will transcend individual lives. The people who are depicted in this drama were real people, but they're not here anymore. But the cause remains. We always are striving to maintain the freedom to obey God and to follow His commandments and to live our life sharing the message of the gospel with other people. And there are opponents to that cause. And if we ever lose sight of the fact that we're in a war, the problem is we get overtaken, and we don't even realize that ground has been lost.
Well, we are in a war, and as I said, I think everyone needs to really understand that in very profound terms. We're in a war. It's just fought. The battles are being fought in a little bit different way, but I think it's a battle nonetheless, and we better consider it a battle. We better understand what liberty is. Now, liberty and freedom, Those kinds of words take the shape of those words, and the definitional qualities change over time. It's grown to be now that those things mean in what maybe some folks would describe as an advanced economy. All that means is that I can do whatever I want to do. Well, that's right straight from the French Revolution. And that's actually part of the doctrinaire humanism that came out of the revolution itself, that language. I can do whatever I want as long as I don't hurt somebody. Is that really true? Can you do whatever you want? And what does it mean to hurt someone? Those things are never defined in the documents during that period of time, but they're just kind of thrown out there. And we still kind of live in their shadow today. And I think they've come to their own. All you got to do is, as we say, just go look, you know, look at it, whatever place you get your news, and you realize that people are doing whatever they want. They have no standards. They have no governors. They have no plumb lines in their life that provides boundaries for them. And they're miserable. Of course, we're all miserable when we don't have standards and plumb lines. And I think what I like about In Freedom's Cause, the story itself, is Wallace had his own plumb lines. He knew his place. He did not want to fight, as we mentioned. So he understood law in that sense, in the sense that where does true authority lie? Well, it wasn't Longshanks in his mind, as Longshanks was a covenant breaker. So law and liberty were found someplace else for Wallace, and they were a transcendent thing, as you say, and they were found in the Bible. They were found in his covenant relationship with his God and then his fellow man. That's William Wallace, and whether, you know, Mel Gibson didn't want to show us that, but he certainly had his opportunities. Wallace was a guy, too, I think we should point out. Wallace was a man that was not just a warrior. We know that he was. We know that he led some battles and some very profound battles, but Wallace was also an intellectual. He spoke four or five languages. He wrote letters to the Pope in Latin. And he was also an ambassador, traveled Europe. So we know that he is a different character. We know his uncles were priests. We know he was brought up in a Christian school. We know he kept a psalter with him all the time, even to the point at the end of his life when they were ripping him into four pieces in London, that he had his psalter, his last request, place the psalter in front of my eyes so that I can continue to read God's word. Well, that's quite a story.
Yes, it is. And it's a legacy, and it's the sort of thing that you're, at least I am, you say, if this is what this man did, if this is how it was, it couldn't have come from him, because all we have to do is put ourselves in those situations, and the easiest thing to do is give in, give up, just make peace, you know, can't we all get along? So it has to be supernatural grace that makes it so that people can stand for their convictions, even to the point of death.
There's just this thread and continuity through these great men and women that I think is just every family at least ought to leave this kind of legacy to their kids. If let them listen to this in Freedom's Cause, I guarantee they'll want to listen to it over and over and over. This is a first class. I would even say, Andrea, it's Disney quality.
Well, I think people should give these as presents, birthday presents, Thanksgiving presents, Christmas presents, Valentine's Day presents, Easter presents. In other words, I recommend that you have some on hand because it's a great way to introduce people to the gospel message without saying, here, I'm introducing the gospel message to you. So how can people follow my instructions to do this?
I love your advice. I love your advice, first of all. They can go to infreedomscause.com, infreedomscause.com. Watch some of the videos, the great behind-the-scenes stuff that you should see, and then maybe go, when you go to buy, if you want to get the family four-pack, I think that's what you typically pick up, Andrea, when you make a purchase, but that there's a lot of bonuses and a lot of values and some discounts on the family four-pack, so a lot of people pick that. There's another pack that says, hey, I'd like to help old Bill out and tell his story. And what a lot of folks are starting to do is buy our Patriots package, which is 25 units, and just pass them around at church. Some people have more money than others, and so Everyone's got you got to decide how you're going to spend your money. You can also just download it if you want to and listen to it that way, too.
Here's an idea. Sure. Since listeners of this podcast hopefully are into Christian education, whether it's home education or Christian day schools, with that 25 or 50 or 100 that you buy, why not gift Christian schools with this for their libraries? Gift it to churches and to put in their library. Maybe not everybody's going to buy it, but if you have the resources that you can share this really inspiring legacy with other people. Well, thank you, Bill. I really do hope that people take advantage of this, and we're at a good time of year to consider gifting. There are many stories yet to be told, not only from Henty stories, but in your own life as well. I encourage you to find your niche where you can take a stand for God's law and freedom and not despise the day of small things. Our friend Bill certainly did not.
Thanks so much again for having me.
And happy Thanksgiving to our listeners. Join me again next time on the Law and Liberty Podcast.